Coming up on today's podcast, it's time for a bit of nostalgia as Wire go back to five drives and a kick to Toby King. But where do Warrington's other tries come from? Daniel provides the answers. Rimmer's Lot takes to the ballroom floor as we strictly predict the games the Wolves must win as it becomes a matter of percentages. Plus, by popular demand, 91-year-old Alan London's back to tell us more about our great wingers' first game at Wilderspool. This is What Would Brian Bevan Say? Hello, I'm Rob London, coming to you from Sydney and Tier Zero. So with us getting down to the nitty-gritty part of the season, where are my two-tiered woven gravelling podcasters? Firstly, introducing a man like grit between your teeth, almost impossible to remove from the show, residing in Tier One, it's Dennis Toothpick Prick Waywell.
Tier Zero also, thank you.
Oh, very good, yes. Dennis. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Now, you went to a Swedish night last night. I saw you were sort of dressed as Bjorn Borg, I saw.
Yes. I think I had all the equipment necessary to perform a Bjorn Borg sort of visual representation of a Swedish man.
Well, I'm not sure it was that visual because you did have a Dunlop racket and Borg played with the Donne.
I knew you were going to pull me up on that. Yeah. Knew it.
Yeah. And also, there's no grit in the work of this man's statistics, and the only thing he knits is this podcast together. From a Tier 3 location, it's Sam Sandy Sankey.
Hello, yes, Tier 3 from midnight 01 on Tuesday. We're still Tier 2. I couldn't meet my parents today in the back garden.
How are we, boys? We've all just watched the grand final.
Drama there.
Yeah, it's a shame that the Panthers didn't score their couple of tries with a good 10 minutes to go. The team that plays wonderful rugby all year suddenly doesn't necessarily freeze on the big day, but starts to panic on the big day because the team that knows how to play the grand final stops them from playing.
When you almost look at the calls and they always seem to go against the team that is obviously seen as the underdog. I don't know whether it is actually that way, but that's what always I feel like as a Warrington fan, going looking at us in grand finals and so on.
Kikau, I thought, was very disappointing for them. He made some very bad decisions. Mm.
I quite like him, though. If we could get hold of him, more than happy to have him.
I'd chip in a few quid for him to come over.
Mm. You never know. Anyway, let's move on to our team. It's been quite a while, boys, since we've done this, and we nearly need to go back 2 weeks since Warrington's last game against Leeds. The Wire team was Ratchford, Charnley, Gelling, King, Ashton, Patton, Widdop, Hill, Walker, Robson, Curry, Hughes, and Jason Clark. The interchange bench was Daryl Clark, Akawala, Davis, and Johnson. The attendance was zero and Steve Price's broken walkie-talkie. So could Wire get back to winning ways and start stringing a run of victories together? Here's the highlights.
Gelling, Patton, just time to push the kick across the arc. King claims and gets the try. Relentless coming from this Rhino side. Can they make it pay with Walters? And Walters is over the line. And Sam Walters has got the try for the Leeds Rhinos that they deserve. Widdop, Ratchford. The ball goes wide to King, and King then gets the pass away to Ashton. Ashton on the outside and in the corner. And Matty Ashton gets the try. Patton again, testing. Claimed by King. King gets the pass away. Curry will get another try for Warrington. And again, the high ball causes the problems. Koala edging towards those Leeds posts. Warrington looking to extend the advantage. Clark looking to go over and claiming the try. Lewis Johnson reckons it's a try, but
I said before, whenever this man gets the ball, it's red alert when you're defending. He's just so quick.
Yeah. Here's Patton, and Patton trying to wrong foot the Leeds defence, but James Harrison makes the tackle. Kick cross field, and the ball is into the arms of Ashton, and Ashton will get his second of the night.
Well, we should probably start by saying, lads, that only one player from that Leeds team that faced Warrington played 4 days later in the Challenge Cup final, and that was Adam Cuthbertson. The other 16 players were completely different. Did you think we were going to win this easy, Sam, going into it?
Yeah, I thought we were going to win by 30 points or so. Little did I know just how hard we were going to make it for ourselves. We should have ran up a cricket score, really, shouldn't we?
We should have done. Well, I'll read out what happened in the first half, and then maybe we can sort of reflect on that first 40 minutes. So in the fifth minute, it was a blast from the past with Dick Patton kicking across field to Toby King to catch and score, and Ratchford converted to make it 6-0. On the 17th minute, poor defending by Wyer leads to a Sam Walters scoring for the Rhinos by barging over. Jared O'Connor converts, and we're all square at 6-6. And then on the 30th minute, Akawala is sent to the sin bin for a spear tackle. On the 36th minute, Wyer receive a penalty and Ratchford elects to kick at goal, which is successful. And we go in at the break 8-6. Dennis, can you remember this far back in your memory? Remember much about that first half?
Bollocks. No, I can't remember any of this. When did this happen? No, I remember the first half and thinking, oh, this is painful. This is so painful. You know, I mean, I know it's always that uncertainty when you're playing a team of unknowns and so on, but, you know, come on. I mean, you've got to have a game plan that really sort of takes the initiative and takes, you know, the dominance of it. And it just didn't feel like that at all.
If you think back a couple of weeks prior to that as well, we put out a youngish team against Salford. We out-enthused Salford and just fell short at the end. So you knew Leeds would come at us full of enthusiasm, and we just needed to be professional, run forward, run hard, but straight from the word go, we were offloading, going sideways, trying to play fancy rugby, and I don't think we gave them the correct respect by running straight and hard.
It was amazing how much ball we had. We actually had, I watched it back today on double speed. Mm. We had 89 play of the balls in that first half to score one try. You commented on this the other week, Sam, against Wigan. It's taken us a lot of play of the balls to come up with anywhere near getting over the try line. When I watched it back on, and I would say that possibly everyone should do this, watch it at double speed because you really get a feel of the game. And what came across to me was that every time Ellis Robson got the ball, he drove hard and he went forward. Every time Anthony Gelling gets the ball, he goes forward. Every time Jason Clark gets the ball or Matty Davis, they get driven back 3 or 4 metres every time. It just, we look light when you're watching it at Benny Hill speed. It sort of, it exaggerates just where we're going wrong. And on so many occasions, we get boxed up in the corner. No one is drawing their man. The ball just goes along the line. No one gets close to the defensive line and then passes the ball. And we end up just in a bit of a mess over on either edge all the time.
Are you advocating a Benny Hill coaching strategy using video
looking at this?
Yes. And maybe I should make a note of this in tackle bag. So obviously, as we move forward, the light is green. And as they get pushed back, it's red. And you can almost count the positive and negative throughout.
Swingometer of Benny Hill. Yes. That's what we need. Just a bit of music in the background.
Is he all right? He's not in trouble for anything, is he, Benny Hill?
I think he's all right. I think he passed through, actually. I think he's okay. Just make a note of that then. We should be fine. One positive that did come out of the first half, I thought, was the kick across field by Dec Patton, Sam. I mean, you've got to give it to him. I know you're not a big fan and he's not the future, perhaps, but in terms of kicking a ball across field for King, Patton, Austin or Widdett, Patton's the best at doing it.
He does put it on a six. He had a lot of practice at it all last year, didn't he?
Oh, that's true.
No, fair play. I've said before, I was having a go at Dec last year and I realised about three quarters of the way through the year, it wasn't really him I was having a go at. It was all the other people who were telling me he was the future when clearly he's not.
I've got to the point in the podcast where we're now discussing that Dec Patton is actually a good player for Warrington to keep hold of, bearing in mind even that last year, I think Sam and Rob knocked him really badly.
How dare you?
I was giving him 10 games.
I've always been behind Dec Patton.
dare you say things like that. At 51st minute, Toby Keane flicks a lovely ball to Ashton, who races in at the corner. Ratchford puts the touchline attempt just wide, and it's 12-6. 62nd minute, it's back in vogue. Yes, a kick from Patton again to King, who offloads to Curry to score. Ratchford nails the kick, and it's 18-6. 71st minute, and bizarrely to make the game safe, Ratchford kicks a penalty to give Wyatt a 20-6 lead and take a 14-point advantage. And then on the 76th minute, Daryl Clark, in frustration, crashes over from play of the ball. Ratchford has on the two, and we're 26-6 up. And then finally, on the 79th minute, Widdett takes a leaf out of the Patton kicking manual, kicking across field again for King to flick the ball onto Ashton, who scores his second of the night. Ratchford makes it six goals from seven attempts, with a final score of 32-6.
If you look at the second half just in isolation, that's how you would have expected us to play. The problem is we took until the 50th minute when Daryl Clark came on to really liven up and go forwards. Again, statistically, we had eight players run over 100 metres. Can't remember the last time we had that. We only missed 15 tackles. We had six clean breaks. We only conceded five penalties.
Yeah.
But it was there for all to see. And I know we've got something in the podcast coming up, a good piece later. It's there for all to see that when we're 10 or 15 metres out from the line, we've not much idea.
Man of the match, guys, who are we going for? I'm having watched it back today, I'm going to go for Widdett. I actually thought Widdett was busy. I thought Widdett looked frustrated. He was looking for runners that just weren't there.
He has touches of class about him, but it's just not quite coming off, and I can't decide yet whether it's him not fitting his play into us or it's us not reading him. But for me, the game turned and we put it to bed as soon as the energy and the direct running from Clark came on.
Well, Dennis, I mean, you're our Swedish tennis player. If we're going to sort of use the metaphor of Bjorn Borg, who was a very stylish player, that beautiful double-handed backhand, the way he moved around the court, serve and volley, using every inch and every blade of grass. Who are you giving your tennis man of the match to?
Just a smash up forward who just like runs into the net. Any of them. Because I didn't see any of that class really anywhere. I think it was very, I don't know, it was almost just desperate, I think. And going back to the Widdett bit, I'm starting, like you, Sam, it was interesting. Is it him or is it the team he's playing in? And I'm starting to side that it's the team tactics that are in and around what he's doing, where he is. I just don't think that they've understood his game and actually started to apply some, tactics around, you know, his game. I just think it's he's finding himself a bit lost.
I think if you look at the way... they watch the game tonight. If Widdett's playing for Melbourne or Penrith and he's running around like that, he's got a lot of talented players that are coming onto the ball, reading him, coming back on the inside. And I just don't think he's quite got it. The one I think he has got slightly watching it back is Curry. Curry seems to know what line he's going to run. But a lot of the times when Curry's not there, then Widdett comes back inside looking for another runner. They're all standing with their hands on their hips. They're not talented enough to play the ball and move it around. I think my dad said the other week, watch Matt Davis. He never passes the ball. He works hard. But there's a few sort of grafters in that side that just are lacking a little bit of flair. Yeah. And maybe that's why we are a bit better with Ratchford at 13. It gives us a bit more of an option in the middle of the park.
I don't think any of us, and I don't think many Warrington fans, are being critical about the amount of effort that this team puts in. I don't think we really question the work ethic. We're just questioning whether they've got that little bit of extra class and ability to win the big one.
They're talented enough to win these games. I think that we have to have focus on the coach. And, Price stands up every week and he gives I don't know what he's even saying. He doesn't even explain where, some of the issues are that he's got. I don't even know if he knows. And I think that's the worrying thing for me is that we have got, we've got Widdett. If he is to go back to the NRL, there's five or six clubs who are all bidding for him, this, that, and the other. They know he's a decent player. Some point you could think, he's over the hill, but he's obviously got something about him. And yet when he comes to Warrington and sits within our team and our players, we're questioning him. I think it's more to do with the coach.
Well, we put the vote out there after the game. Well, that was fun, ? We gave four options. Yes, it was wonderful. I'm off for a lie down. I like Carney's coat. or horseshit? Yes, it was wonderful. Only got 3.4%. I'm off for a lie down. Got 23.3%. I like Carney's coat. Got 22.2%. But the winner, a unanimous decision. Horseshit, 51.1%.
Price did say something like, I'm paraphrasing a bit, this break will come at a good time for us. So whether there's a few bumps and bruises and he just wanted to...
Are you Price's spin down, doctor now, Sam? Is that what you're working for him? Is this what's happening now? No, I'm starting to feel a bit that way. Horse shit. Anything positive to come out of horse shit at all, Dennis? Anything at all?
Well, my roses have had a very good year this year because I got some horse shit that I put down over there. So they've really prospered in that situation.
Excellent.
The other thing about horse shit is it, you know, it's obviously very fertile. So when you're planting your seedlings as well, it's always very good in the germination process. So plenty to take out with horse shit. Let's not all be negative.
No, don't think you are. Horses produce 8 piles of horse shit a day, up to 50 pounds or 9 tons of shit a year. It's excellent to spread on growing vegetables and flowers, and it doesn't burn their roots, Dennis, just as you said. Unlike dog crap, if you fall headfirst into horse shit, it contains no harmful parasites. Well, that's pretty good. You can also burn horse shit for your home, and you could actually, with that very same home, build the home out of horse shit bricks. So I think there's a positive there to take from the performance. We also asked the question on current form, who do you prefer as Warrington's number six? We had Austin and Patton. Patton got 10.8% of the vote. Austin still got 89.2% of the vote. Where was Austin, Sam? Was he just being rested? What was he doing?
He still perhaps was away with the fairies after getting smacked in that Wigan game, was he?
5 minutes to go, 16 all. We're camped on the opponent's try line in the grand final. Who would you like on the field? I'm not saying over the 75 minutes to get us there. We've got 5 minutes to go. We've got 6 play of the balls. I'd quite like Patton on the field rather than Austin.
I see what you say. I haven't seen anything off Austin where, you know, you've mentioned it before about, you know, rising to the occasion in a big game or a moment like that. And there's nothing that's really suggested that he could do that. But, you know, I agree. Look at Patton. You've got an option there in terms of a stutter pass or a kick to Toby
kick
Kington.
To
you know, it's going to land on the spot.
I'd be surprised if Patton hasn't put more players through gaps than Blake Austin over the last 2 years.
Is that a euphemism?
Could be. Price on the game said it was scrappy at times, but we got the result. We had a high level of intent at the start, but I just thought we had it upside down after that. We passed before we ran. It bit us on the backside. Not the most perfect of English yet again. Is he saying from that, Sam, that we're not actually drawing the line before passing the ball? Is that what he's saying there? Not quite sure.
I think after having just read that as you were reading it, I think he's suggesting perhaps what I mentioned, we didn't run hard and straight in the first 15 minutes. We started trying to play football before we'd got on top of them and earned the right to.
Dennis, I believe Stevie also came up with the oxymoron quote of the year.
The urgency and patience that is required to win a game. Is that the one you're referring to?
We need more urgency and patience.
Well, I have had a look at this, and when you look at an oxymoron, I'll give some examples. Maybe you can play oxymoron bingo next time you're listening to him talk. Awfully good, clearly misunderstood, pretty ugly, small crowd, only choice, minor miracle, all oxymorons. Some famous quotes that I've heard about this on oxymorons. Andy Warhol famously said, I am a deeply superficial person. So maybe it's something that you can take note of there, Mr. Price. Banksy, a lot of people never use their initiative because no one told them to. So here's another one. But the best one is probably Donald Trump. He said, the budget was unlimited, but I exceeded it. There you go.
Excellent.
I think that's something that Simon Moran has every year.
This week's highlights to the beat of William Orbit's Adagio for Strings. Dennis, what would you like to see go into orbit?
Well, Orbit, as you know, was launched in 1899. The chewing gum, was released in the US in 1944, marketed by Wrigley, for fresh breath and eating and drinking to take that smell away. Advertising for the gum also introduced the Orbit Girl, played by the lovely Vanessa Branch, who was always turning up in a dirty situation, wearing all white, a scarf and a smile. Absolutely superb advertising, I thought. But that's not what we're going to go into, Orbit or the Orbit Girl. We don't want to go there. If you look at the flavours of Orbit, you know, what's your sort of favourite flavour of chewing gum, guys?
I don't eat chewing gum. I was just thinking, actually, you don't see any coaches eating chewing gum anymore, do you? You know.
Yeah.
It always used to have a bit of gum in the mouth, but I'm not a big fan of chewing gum, to be fair, Dennis. So you're asking the wrong man. I'm more of a bubble gum.
Well, they do
bubble
do gum. A bubble gum flavour.
Oh, lovely.
So that's one for you, Sam. Thank have you. You got one a particular fancy?
Anything like that? I'm classic mint. Classic.
Oh, yeah, classic mint. I would have thought you're a cinnamon one, but I thought, well, maybe the only thing that I would like to go into Orbit as a flavour was Timothy Taylor's. I think it would be a healthy alternative to drinking, because that way you could feel like you've had a heavy drinking session without actually consuming alcohol.
Dennis, we've lost the contract.
Oh, Jesus. All right.
It's time for 91 Years of Age, Alan London. Oh, it's turned out nice again.
So, Dad, tell us about Brian Bevan's first game.
Well, I think it was about 1946. I went to watch the A-team. It's not that I did it very often in those days. And in those days, there was a big stand opposite the main stand where you could stand and be covered, and that's where I was. So in the first half, Warrington were playing towards the Fletcher Street end. So on the right wing, must have been 100 yards from me, was what appeared to be an old man with thinning hair and knees all bandaged up, running down the right wing. And he got one or two passes. And to my mind, from 100 yards away, he didn't seem to know how to beat a man. He was sidestepping probably 10 yards short of the man. The surprising thing was that he was beating him. Come the second half, he didn't get many passes or any passes at all until the very final minute, when Warrington had a scrum on their own line at the Fletcher Street end. The ball in those days went along the line because you didn't know which side it was coming out of the scrum, so defences were further back. He took the ball under his own sticks and then set off towards the right wing. I don't know where the fullback was. He certainly curved round his wing and just outpaced everybody down the right wing, curved round and scored under the stick. Now, if he hadn't had that last minute, I don't think we'd have signed him, because Leeds had already rejected him. It turned out he was an Australian sailor whose boat was in docked somewhere down south for maintenance. I think it was Bill Shankland had recommended him to Warrington. You wouldn't know Bill Shankland, but he was a top Australian who played for Warrington, a top golfer as well, I think. Anyhow, we signed him, and I think the following week he played for the first team, and it became pretty obvious that it was a great signing. Unfortunately, he had to go back to Australia to get demobbed, and so we didn't see him again for probably another 6 months. That was the story, and the rest is history.
And did he only play rugby league?
In those days, you had to have another job because it was only part-time. And he was a hairdresser, and he cut your brother's hair.
How was the haircut, Mum?
Terrible!
It seems we're getting closer and closer to teams perhaps not completing their entire fixture quota, with both Catalan's games against Wyre and Wigan cancelled. Or are they just postponed? Time to take a look at the table, which has Saints out on top. They've played 15. They've got an 80% percentage record now. They look home and dry. Second, Wigan Warriors on 15 played again. They've got 73.33%. And then Warrington are in third. They've won 10 of their 15 games on 66.67%. That's matched with Catalan, who've only played 12 games. They've won 8, and they too are on 66.67. And then Rhinos have played 14, Leeds having won 8 games, and they're down on 57.14. The rest we can forget about. They're out of the equation now. Sam, looking at those sort of final running games, I'm saying now that really, to be safe, Warrington have got 4 games left. They've got Salford, Hull KR, Huddersfield and Saints, if nothing else is rearranged with Catalans. I think we have to win 3 of those games now, looking at the other two fixtures with Leeds and Catalans.
We have to win 3 to be guaranteed, but I think I still think we'll only need 2. I'm not quite sure why you think the Wigan game against Leeds won't be played.
Well, the only reason I don't think that will be played is because I've spoken to a few journalists this week who tell me it won't be played.
Even though it's scheduled to be played on the last weekend when we play Saints versus Saints and Warrington.
I honestly don't know. I'm also told that Catalans are desperate to rearrange the game against Salford, but not against Wigan and Warrington.
Yes, well, so there's no surprise there, is there?
Yeah.
There's no surprise. Catalan are potentially in trouble because they play St Helens next.
Yeah.
And if they don't play that game, because currently, if I understand it, the 7 players who are isolating now will not be available for that game. That assumes not more players go down. But if they don't play that St Helens game, they're going to struggle to actually make 15 matches.
Yeah, but they don't have to play 15 matches because there's a clause.
Oh, go on.
There's a clause. They want teams to play 15 games, but if teams don't make 15 games, it will go in front of a panel and be reviewed. So Catalan might only have to play 14 games if it's down to the fact that they've had too much COVID and it's been out of their, you know, possibilities that they could actually play the games. They will accept them on 14. Now, I know that will really, really upset Warrington if it is the case.
I thought it was only if they were ahead of other teams on points.
That's the other part of the clause. So, look, theoretically, you could play 12 games and have a shitload of points. I don't know if you could actually do that with 12 games.
You could have 24 points. You could win them all, couldn't you?
Yeah. So that's one clause. But the other clause is that they will readdress it and see when we get to the end of the year. And I think it possibly will come down to not just Catalans. There might be a few other teams that fall short of the 15. They're going to review that.
It's not like the rugby league to put a rule in place and then change the rule partway through, is it?
I believe Richard Agar has come out today moaning about it now because he's realised the same thing, is that Catalan are obviously not going to be playing anywhere near the same amount of games as Leeds, and obviously he doesn't agree with the rules now. So, get on with it.
I don't think Wigan are home and hosed yet. I could see Wigan losing 3.
What happens to your statistics there if you have a draw, Sam?
He came out with this on Twitter earlier today.
What does that do to it?
Not all the teams are in brilliant form, are they? I mean, Leeds are hardly crash hot every week. So there's a fair chance that even though they're playing Castleford twice and Wakefield twice, they're not going to win them all. There's also a fair chance that Warrington aren't going to beat Salford, Hull KR and Huddersfield, I mean, the way we're playing. So
I agree with that.
It's exciting. Exciting end of the season.
if we don't beat Salford and Hull KR in our next 2 games, because Salford have had it tough and Salford play St Helens on Monday, so they're going to be on a short turnaround. If we don't beat Salford this time, then we don't deserve to be in that top 4.
Yes. Wait and see. Now, at the start of the season, during an interview, Steve Price invented a new verb for the English dictionary with his word blindshotted. So you may be blindsided to hear where Warrington's tries actually come from. Here's Daniel with the facts to answer Price's blindshotted take and our blindside view.
Usually, it would be Sam presenting you with the startling stats and fascinating figures, but now I'm here to discuss a statistical topic that has been bugging me for a while: how Warrington score their tries. For much of the year, I thought that Wire have only been capable of scoring tries in a certain few ways: kicks to the corner, breakaways from our own half, the Austin dummy, barge overs and offloads. So, I looked back at all 63 tries scored by the Warrington Wolves in 2020 and assigned them to those 5 categories in an attempt to test my theory that we only know how to score in these ways. It turned out that 50 of our 63 tries fitted into these categories. There have been 11 barge overs, any try where a forward has muscled their way over the line. We've had 10 tries scored from kicks to the corner, which I think is a surprisingly low figure given that it's such a well-frequented Wire tactic. 6 of our tries have been scored through Austin individual moments of quality, and 5 from offloads near the line. Most interestingly for me, we have scored 20 tries, nearly a third of the season's total, through breakaways from range. To clarify, this is any try that starts with a move from 40 or more metres out and ends up in a score. Then there are 11 tries remaining that fall into the others category. Two of those were scored as a result of errors from the opposition gifting Wire tries, but only 6 times have Wire scored as a result of quick or accurate passing or play near the line. Somewhat hilariously though, Wire scored 3 tries of this kind when a youthful lineup took to the field against Salford in September. If you ever wanted something to sum up the problems with Steve Price's coaching of the attack and our attacking game plan and structure under him, it's that. Or maybe it's the fact that we are far more likely and far more dangerous to score a try from 90 metres out than 10 metres out. We simply have no idea what to do in front of the opposition line. I think it's time to go. I think it's
time to go. Well, I think you sort of touched on it before, Sam. Pretty interesting to see where our tries are coming from. And look, it's no surprise. We're not good close to the line.
No, exactly. I think this is I think we should first say thank you for Daniel for having the time
to go
back and watch all of those tries.
Doing Sam's job.
Yeah, exactly. Doing my job.
Yeah. Really interesting stats, I thought, Dennis. You know, what about episode 80? Yeah, and absolutely brilliant stats. It just blew me away when I actually when I heard that
sound. Best stats I've seen.
Absolutely. Sorry, Sam. Sorry, carry on.
I couldn't agree more. But we did touch on it a couple of weeks ago. In fact, we've touched on it more than once. How dangerous we look when we're around the halfway line and we move the ball.
Yeah.
And how we don't seem to manage to do that 20 metres or 50 metres or 10 away from the line. I think also only 10 kicks to the corner. Well, 3 of those came against Leeds.
Well, looking at the comparisons, we're going to, because of the fact it's been the grand final here in Sydney today, we looked at sort of that 40-metre zone. Daniel's come out with the fact that we've scored about 20 tries from outside that 40-metre zone. So we run at about 32% of Warrington's tries are coming from afar. That's probably because of Matty Ashton and the way he's chammed onto a lot of those balls. In comparison, Melbourne, who a terrific back line, you'd think would score a lot more, are only scoring 15% of their tries from 40 metres out, and Penrith only 9%. So you can just see how structured those sides are. I mean, they are scoring amazing tries, but when they get down the opposition's line, they don't half make them pay, Sam.
Yes, but one thing I'd like to bring up about the NRL and today's final, and ask you, Rob, whether you can do a bit of work for us. Do you think you could actually go this week and buy a popcorn chicken slab and give us a critique on it?
I'll do that for you, Sam, and I'll report back next. I mean, the fact I'm vegan, I might struggle with it, but I'll give it to the dog and see.
Not vegan on a Friday, are you? Yeah.
KFC, not content with making us all eat from a bucket, now want us to eat a slab.
Do they?
Popcorn chicken.
There's one up the road. There's one about every 50 yards in Sydney. So I'll let you know, mate. I'll put a picture up on Twitter for you. You can see what it looks like. The other thing that we looked at was play of the balls. How quickly Melbourne and Penrith score a try. They both average pretty much the same. 8.3 play of the balls before they score a try. Against Leeds, Warrington had 180 play of the balls, scoring 5 tries, averaging a try every 36 play of the balls. I mean, if that's not a worry, what is?
I'm just laughing at the way that you say play of the balls. It's almost like we've gone back 40 years.
Would you like to play with my balls, Dennis?
I'll give that a miss.
Becomes Rugby League's pin-up strippogram following wearing a new trench coat on Sky Sports, with rumours he's attired in suspenders and crotchless panties underneath. Scientists at Cambridge University scientifically prove that paint drying on a wall has more charisma than Bill Arthur. And Her Royal Highness admits Professor Steve Broomhead was downgraded from a knighthood to an MBE, with palace staff concerned the knighting stool might have buckled.
Yes, it's onto the news stories. We've heard the headlines. It seems the news of Gareth Widdop and the speculation of him returning to Oz at the end of the season has broken amongst the media. I mean, we've known on the podcast for quite a while now, boys, and we've sort of been a bit hush-hush on this, but I think it was sort of in the press yesterday that his missus has returned to Australia. all I can say on this now is it comes down to compassion, doesn't it? Surely it's time for the poor lad to go home. It's not about rugby league. It's about being with your family. We spoke to him a few occasions prior to having him on the podcast. He's a lovely lad. He's got beautiful children. He needs to be back in Australia now. Forget Warrington. Get yourself back over here, mate, and get yourself with your family. Staying on the NRL, Ryan Hall has left the Sydney Roosters during the 2 years Hall played for the Eastern Suburbs Club. The Roosters scored more points than any other NRL team, tallying a staggering 220 tries. Hall, unfortunately, only made 11 appearances for the Roosters and didn't manage to score a single try. Just went a little bit late to the NRL, Sam. That knee went pop and he sort of already signed to come, but pity he just couldn't have got the one try.
Yes, you've summed it up there. A bit late to go. I've been a fan of Ryan Hall. I've never quite understood the way the Leeds players were calling him world's best winger or whatever the exact phrase he were using for him, but a very good player. But you can't go at the age that he went with a slightly dodgy knee and try and break into one of the very best teams.
But a player who had far more successful 2 years in the NRL was John Bateman, playing 23 games for the Raiders in 2019, making 40 offloads, averaging 116 metres per game. He was runner-up in a grand final and was crowned the NRL Dally M second rower of the year. This year's not been too good because he's been hit by injury, only making 11 appearances for Canberra with 10 offloads, but still averaging 111 metres. Dennis, do you think they're getting the Bateman that was left behind Wigan? Do you think they're getting the same guy back?
I don't know. I think, like you just say, I think since the injury, he set it all on fire, didn't he, last year? This year, I think it was more like of burning embers.
Leeds narrowly beat Salford in the Challenge Cup final, 17-16. What did you make of it, lads? I didn't really see the game too much of it.
I was interested in Dennis and whether he thought it was another masterclass that Salford deliberately don't ever want to be ahead in a game.
Well, yeah, it's a bit difficult. They had a really tough run up, didn't they? They missed Sargentson, who they put a lot of emphasis on. But if you go look to the game itself, it had drama without actually having the
drama and horse shit.
It had that's quality. Don't forget, I'm not sure whether the quality was all the way up for horse shit.
I did speak to a mate here who watches a little bit of footy in the UK, normally just the Challenge Cup final every year. And he phoned me and he said, mate, how did the fullback get man of the match when he dropped a ball? Like, he just couldn't comprehend that you were giving man of the match to a bloke who dropped a ball. I didn't actually see it, but I'm presuming Myler dropped a ball, did he, at some point?
He did. But I also think that Salford did blow the chance right at the last minute when they were already behind and they had four tackles in the bag, and he tried to move the ball left to score in the corner, where surely the play was to set up for a 17-all drop goal.
Dear. Sitiliti Akawala has been banned for 3 games for a dangerous throw on Leeds' James Harrison. The 28-year-old was charged with a grade C offence and will miss the next 3 games for Warrington. You're going to come on to him in a little bit, Sam, I think, on the stats, so we might just move on. But silly, silly man, Dennis. Silly, silly man.
Well, it's a very silly man, isn't he? He should never do that. I'd want to question why you're putting 28 years old in there.
Oh, is that not his age?
Well, no, I'm just wondering what it means and why you're referencing it.
I just couldn't paste it from the BBC.
I think he's possibly saying that 28-year-olds should be a bit more mature in their game. And the game management.
Yes, yes.
Oh, exactly. He's back again with his mature, isn't he?
Yes, yes, exactly.
Jesus. How old are you, Sam? You've just gone aged another 10 years since last time we spoke to you.
I go into the next bracket of worry for COVID in another 2 months.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. So you're over 60.
Super League Grand Final will not take place at Old Trafford because of Manchester United's schedule. The ground has staged the showpiece event since 1998. The Super League Grand Final will now be played on a glamorous Friday night in Humberside. And finally, we've heard back from 1876 Halliwell Jones Restaurant. They've spoken to the chef and they can confirm that the Puy lentil is an authentic Puy Marquis lentil from Le Puy. Sam, you might be going, I hear. You've got your 50% discount now. Are you going to be venturing down to 1876?
No.
Oh, you're making me eat a corn slab from KFC and you won't even go to the...
Go on then. I will. I was wondering whether there's a little bit of a workaround here for the club next time matches are being played at the Halliwell Jones, whether you could book a table there and watch the match through the window.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because if you look where the windows are, you can't watch them from your table. If you look, you've got to stand up to look out the window.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, but I want to know what's going to happen now on Monday, because they were going to watch the Catalans match on the big screen, and Ben Westwood's doing a chat about, like, you know, what he sees. So how's he going to fill in now? What's he going to use?
Is he there every day, Ben Westwood? Is he greeting people every day? Is the concierge at the restaurant? Or is he just sort of part time? Just turns up when he needs.
I think he's probably cooking any sausages to order.
Ooh, baguettes.
Baguettes.
Okay, now some of you may have picked up on a theme has started to appear when Sam talks bollocks. Yes, his dog starts to bark. And having recently learned that it loves nothing more than licking its own bollocks, what could be more appropriate? As it's over to...
Statistics, caveats, bollocks. Listen up, you norms, it's time for Sam to talk shite. For 5 minutes... It's Sam Sankey's shitistics. No. Dick's data. No. Anal cyst. No. Twat stats. No. Statistics. Yes. That's it. It's time for Sam Sankey's statistics.
I want to look at value for money this week, and I want to look at Toby King in particular to start off with. He played his 100th game for Warrington against Leeds, and I think he's developed into a key member of our team. when he first came in, I thought he didn't look quick enough, but I have to admit, I now really like him. And although perhaps he's not outstanding at any one thing, he's good all around. His stats over the last 3 years, I'm going to suggest he's our best player, pound for pound. He's played in 66 of 77 potential games, scored 23 tries, 29 try assists, 169 tackle busts and of 32 clean breaks, 78 offloads. He's only conceded 29 penalties, so that's less than one every two games.
Hang on. You started out by saying he wasn't that fast, and then have given us all stats about not being about speed. Can you give us a stat on how fast he is then?
Pappenhausen
today reached 35 kilometres. Toby's not quite reached 28 yet at full pelt.
Where are you getting all these kilometres per hour crap from?
Did you watch the match with the sound down today?
I was watching Taskmaster with my daughter, so I didn't really see much.
Andy's only 24, so he's not matured yet.
Oh, Jesus. How old do you have to be to mature?
Let's get him with the cheese. What sort of cheese would he be then on the mature scale, Sam?
He's a medium cheddar at the minute.
That's not very good, is it?
Luther Burrell only played 7 games. And I was being kind to him to say he was available for 21. That's going back to when he made his first appearance. So he's available for 21 games. So he's played 33%. He was only averaging 20 minutes a game. So he only played 140 minutes of rugby league. Now, we don't know what he was on, but I'd say that's at least £1,000 per minute, probably near £1,500 per minute. So are we getting value there? No, a failed experiment. Latu has played 3 games out of 15 available. He's averaged 30 minutes a game, so he's only actually played 120 minutes so far this season. So he's only actually played 1.5 games of rugby.
What kind of cheese is Latu?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Dairy Lee.
Yeah. God. Very much. He's not even a proper cheese yet, has he? Or maybe Luther Burrell was not even a proper cheese.
He's a pecorino, isn't he?
No. No, that's a quality cheese. costs a shitload of money, that does. Oh, I see what you mean, Dennis. Yeah. Right. Mm. Sorry, Sam, carry on.
No, no, Sitalecki. This is the enigma. Over 3 years, he's played 45 games in Super League. I'm being kind to say he's averaging 30 minutes a game. The key for me with Sitalecki is when he plays, he makes metres. This year, he's carried the ball 57 times for over 500 metres, an average of 9 metres. But 57 times in his 8 appearances, it's only 7 carries a game. Only 7 carries per game. Mike Cooper's carried the ball 227 times so far this year. 227 times. Chris Hill is averaging 15 carries a match. Cooper's averaging nearly 20 carries in his last 3 games. Sitalecki, just 7 carries a game. The coach has to put him in the team or the coach has to get rid. Because
I just want to know what cheese he is. What cheese is he?
He's a cheese that promises a lot, but doesn't quite deliver.
Well, never mind what kind of cheese they are. Can any of them dance?
And time now for Rimmer's Lot at the home of the National Rugby League Museum. And with Strictly returning to the BBC, one hopes there's a sense of rhythm to this week's episode. My husband believed for years in the rhythm method, which probably explains why we ended up with 6 children. I wonder if Anton de Beck uses a condom. One would love to find out.
One, two, three, one, two, four. Oh, I just can't do it, Ralphie. Are you sure this is a good idea to enter Strictly?
Come on, Stevie, darling. Of course it's a good idea. We must make a big song and dance about it. We need as much publicity as we can get. Rugby League won't have had this much national exposure since Des Drummond went up and over the big obstacle wall on Superstars without the use of a rope.
But only the Sheilas and the Dead Set Nancy boys take to the floor where I'm from, Ralphie.
Now listen here, Stevie. It's 2020. It doesn't really matter what sexual orientation, which way you swing. Or even the fact that you're Australian. You and Tanya Arnoldi are going to walk the Strictly competition extravaganza.
Where is Tanya? She hasn't shown up for rehearsals ever since I brushed up too closely to a foxtrot.
Yes, well, there was enough static electricity generated to light up the whole of Dewsbury. Besides, Stevie, furlong is set to finish soon, and based on your current percentages and refusal to look at the table, I think the only way you can go is to do the tango.
Oh, could I not just have a can of Vimto?
Ah, there you are, Ms. Arnoldi. Oh, I may one just say how ravishingly gorgeousio you look in that frock. Oh, is it an off-the-peg number?
No, it's not. It's fucking prime ironing, Grimmer. And the sodding fucking elastics playing hell with me bollocks.
Oh, dear. Not to worry. We have a spare 55-inch elasticated girdle left by Professor Broomhead when he was auditioning. Come this way, Tanya. Steve is waiting for you in the Phil Ford Quickstep Ballroom.
I tell you this for free, Grimmer. If you don't get me to meet Bruno Tomioli, there's fucking no chance. I'm supporting your bid to run Super League. Elson's promised me a weekend away with Len Goodman.
Oh, no, rest assured, Ms. Arnaldi. As the motto goes here at the museum, we're not just a Severn, we're more of a Brian Bevan. Now, I think to start, shall we practice with the American slow?
Slow? Slow? Slow? He's only got one speed, that fuckwit, you know.
Well, that's unfair. He is from Wallamaloomaloomaloo.
Right, let's get on with this, you chidless fool. I've promised to help Bill Arthur shop for a personality in Leeds at 3 o'clock. Right, shall we start with a fishtail contra lunge?
Oh, that's no way to talk about Stevie. Right, I'll put the music on. It's the Paso du Bon. Right, let's get into the mood. Yes, one, two. Careful, Stevie. Don't stand on Tanya's toes. She's not wearing a steel toe caps.
Fucking Antibi North! You've stood on me fucking foot again! Right, that's it. I'm out of here. Working with Barry and Terry will be better than this fucking shite.
Oh, tackle sacks.
Oh, struth, Rolfie. Tanya's got the shits. What are we going to do now?
Now, let's not panic, Stevie. I didn't get where I am today without having a plan B up my sleeve. Or should I say skirt? Ta-da! Yes, Stevie, I've been wearing this vintage Harry Grayson duffel coat for a reason.
Jesus, Rolfie! Where did you get that sequin dress from? You're the most beautiful-looking bloody Sheila I've ever seen.
It was a Mosi Colotos. It was left behind following our rugby league transvestite through the ages catwalk section. Now, hold me tight, Stevie, and guide me round the floor on this Rumbelows dance number. Remember, it's in your DNA. Feel the passion and dance with hard-nosed intensity. Oh, Stevie, yes, yes, this is wonderful. I've never felt such discombobulation since choosing a Rediffusion 26-inch colour television in Rumbelow's Sound and Vision department in 1983. Oh, is that your Alamanna?
Nah, Rolfie. That's just my water bottle pressing up against your cock.
Oh, yes. I think we're going to make it all the way to Blackpool. I'll be able to show you the lights, the pleasure beach, and even a donkey.
Nah, Buckley's chance of that, Rolfie. Craig Tice will move back to Oz years ago.
Oh, Stevie, I'll even take you up the tower.
Oh, steady on, Rolfie. I'm not that kind of guy.
Now, don't be so prude, Stevie. Anyway, a little bit of open hip twist and progressive waltz with a little kiss at the end won't do us any harm at all. Imagine the publicity. We'll be this year's Strictly Scandal.
Oh, gee, Rolfie. Is this what they call the Strictly Curse?
No, Stevie. That would be Mr. Elston in charge of the Strictly Broadcasting Rights.
Time to go over to a ladyboy putting a thick layer of eyeliner on and cutting his own fringe. Yes, to review Rimmer's Lot, it's Claudia Winklewank.
I won't have a word said against Claudia, and there's no need for that extra swear word.
Dear,
however, This week's episode promised much as it tried to capture the glitter ball magic.
Oh, lovely.
Right. Yeah, the episode opened full of optimism. I thought Arnold gave us a wonderfully hammed up performance.
Arnaldi, somehow, sorry.
Just for legal reasons, Tanya Arnaldi. Arnaldi. Litigation.
If you think it's someone else, Sam, that's you.
Okay. A wonderful hammed up performance somehow for all the sequin dresses and heel toe action that we could have had from her. We managed a bit more of a B minus than bewitching, I felt. The episode, I thought, was going to be saved by the interaction of Ralph and Stevie, where it looked like we were going to reach the dizzy heights of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, but again, sadly, tailed off into a pastiche of British seaside jokes.
Do you think he's had a stroke, Dennis?
I don't know, but part of that, where he sort of cut in and out, I thought I heard the word twat.
And time now for the Twitter vote. Is that it? Is that all I have to say? That one line? I have to say more in lockdown letters. This is so insulting.
Well, obviously, we don't know the results of the election yet, but what we do know is that about 4 in 10 of us probably didn't even bother to vote. Pollsters have a name for people like this. They call them morons.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Why did Paxman get the big line? This is utter horseshit.
Right, on to the Twitter vote, which was, have Warrington spent wisely when it comes to their marquee signings? We go 4 options. Yes, make my mind up at the end of the season. No, or what marquee signings? Question mark. The winner, I was actually quite surprised by this, was no. 46.6% of the votes went for no. Dennis, are you happy with our marquee signings? Do you think they've been value for money?
I think Widdup, you know, circumstances different. Yes, I think it was probably a good move. Austin, on reflection, and it's only hindsight, it's nothing, I'm looking into this in any different way, but I do feel that we probably bought the wrong player. And as a lot of people have suggested, Cesar is having a cracking season, and he probably maybe should have been the Canberra man we should have got.
I'm sitting firmly on the fence, as you would well imagine. I think both players have been good. But with that marquee tag comes a greater expectation.
Greater, cheese. So you're keeping this going now, yeah. Sam. This is excellent work.
Now, it's clear, following not only his brilliant tackle bags ideas, but now also becoming the agony aunt of the show. Dennis is podcasting ambidextrous. So whether he's yin and yang, north or south of the river, George Michael or Andrew Ridgely, or perhaps even Brian Bevan, or Matty Russell. Yes, ambidextrously grasping his little cock in both hands, it's time for...
Tackle Bags.
You're joking. Not another one? Oh, for God's sake, I can't stand this.
Welcome back to Tackle Bags. Here we are again. Just as you thought it was going away, he's back with another idea. Rob, you take a seat there, lean back, take it easy. Sam, listen up tight. This is right up your street. I'll cover off last time. I looked at how we can support the teams during a difficult period, with a COVID going on and the dramatic injury crisis that teams could have as a fixture list are becoming harder and harder to fulfill this season. So we summarise this, basically in 2021, I don't think it's going to be that much different. We're likely to experience some of these bubbles bursting and leading to multiple players being stood down again. So we needed something that would actually get us through the season. Now, the idea they came up with was the Super League team understudy draft system, or studs for short, would be a specialist squad of players taken from the best of the championship sides that would be centrally funded by Super League. Here, the players would be managed and trained by the England manager, our highly paid minister without portfolio. The squad would consist of all the specialist positions, along with a number of players that have versatility to cover more than one position. The stud system, financed by Super League, would effectively enable another pathway from the lower leagues to break through. The players would be eligible for under 24 years only, facilitating youth development and strengthening the championship sides. So, great idea. Excellent response here. 94% people agreed. Sylvester Stewart said, this one is one of the best ideas I've heard on Tackle Bags. Clearly, you are the stud of the podcast. Up until this point, you've been putting your dick into any old mare of an idea. Well, there's no need to be like that.
No, that's disgusting.
I know it is. No 5%. This was off Dune Prigbrass. Who knows what these are. If the responsibility lies with Super League, then you would literally be putting those players out to grass while that fucking horse shit whisperer Elston continues to ride his blind pit pony. I think that was a little bit of a dig at Elston there. I'm not sure if you agree. 1% other. This one was off Richard Witter-Wittermore. I think John Keir would be suited to manage the stud system. He's been talking horseshit for years. Horseshit keeps making an appearance in this podcast.
It does,
along with cheese, doesn't it? I don't know what's going on here today. Anyway, this week, we're looking at the coaching in particular here, how teams receive their messages from the coaching staff. Now, quite often during a game, the so-called water carrier are busying themselves around the offensive and defensive lines, spending most of the time passing on messages from the coaches whilst the play continues. Now, in some circumstances, the messages may get mixed up or completely missed altogether, which I think we saw in one of our games the other week, where decision to kick the ball rather than run it. And now, in order to sort of clean this farcical element of the game up and bring it into the 21st century, I'd like to propose a new technological solution. Rather than the messages being communicated under the guise of the water carrier, I'm proposing the introduction of an integrated comms scrum cap. The Communications Universal Media Cap is a device that allows two-way communications from the scrum crap, not like the idea, the scrum cap directly to the coaching staff. Integrated with an earpiece and microphone, one player from each of the team will be allocated to wear a device during the game, allowing the coach to talk directly to the player and set out the tactics and instructions directly. This would eliminate the necessity of the coaching staff to constantly get in the way of play and being in, and running around the pitch. And, you know, I think there's a psychological thing here as well. I think by having that player, and especially around the defensive line, it makes the opposition think there's more player and less gap there because you've got this guy running about. So that's for another time. So I think it would really increase the sense of efficiency that the players have in terms of decision making. And quickly changing the tactics. if you could remove that picture from there, Mr. London. Is that Tony Barrow saying, "I hate fucking taco bags"?
It is, yeah.
Anyway, in addition, for a small fee, fans could also tune into the frequency to understand some of the strategies and tactical decisions made by the coach to increase the fans' experience. I'd love to hear some of the comments that Bellamy was shouting down the microphone today when he was 20 odd points up with 20 minutes to go, absolutely losing it down the microphone, kicking a chair over and this, that and the other. It'd be love to tune into those little audio frequencies. So what do you think, guys? Is this idea going to float or is it going to be a goat cheese?
Well, I think a lot of your ideas are floating, Dennis, because I was surprised to see tonight that the goalposts were lighting up in the NRL. Excellent. Hey, who came up with that earlier this season?
I know, yes.
It was last season.
Yeah,
so far ahead. Bloody head.
Predictions.
We can predict the future. Or is this the inevitable urge to try?
Good afternoon to you. Earlier on today, apparently, a woman rang the BBC and said she heard that there was a hurricane on the way. Well, if you're watching, don't worry, there isn't.
I'll predict Warrington, but can I do it with a caveat, please?
Time for a prediction and not predictions, as we were going to look forward to not one game, but two games before the next podcast. However, Dennis and Sam, with why are now not slaying the out-of-puff dragon and driving away with the same percentages, will it be left for the Mancunian Devil to pick Wires, Carlock and Joyride all over their stats?
We're going to break this run against Salford because we lost to them three times last year as well. So we're on our five-game losing streak.
Oh.
But I'm confident we're going to put 20 on them easy. We're going to win by 20.
Okay.
Now, normally, I would probably go for a Warrington win, but I'm going to be pessimistic. I don't think we're going to do it. I think we're going to be out-coached by Ian Watson. Salford have already come out in the press and said they're not going to just lie down and let the season fizzle out. They're going to really make sure that they finish strongly. So I think by saying this, hopefully we'll win. But I don't think we will, based on how we've played in the last few weeks. I think having a rest and a break is actually going to do us more harm than good.
But surely not. Surely Warrington have to turn them over this time. Surely we have to get back to winning ways. Just one other point I want to make, and this was pointed out to me today, and that sort of looking at that team that was going to play Catalans, there was no Matty Ashton. I wasn't concerned too much that Matty Ashton wasn't in, but I do feel a little bit that we are being treated like mushrooms again. There's no explanation as to why he was left out of the team. And I think we're all left wondering a little bit. And I don't think that's the way it should be.
I think we mentioned this a bit earlier on in the podcast with me saying about Price and like in his interviews, not really explaining himself. And I think this is the point, is that he does have a responsibility to sort of explain some of these decisions because, you know, the fans really love Matty Ashton and like, you know, he's like our star player in the making. Whether he plays every week or not is irrelevant, but he's our star player in the making. Why all of a sudden is he not in the squad? And it might be something like, you know, oh, we're just resting him or, you know, he's picked up a bit of a niggle. We didn't want to risk it. Then tell us, we're the fans at the end of the day.
I think without knowing what question was asked, if he was asked the question and dodged it, then I agree with Dennis, he should answer the question. But he might not have been asked the question. It might be that Ashton doesn't like flying and they're not prepared to admit it.
Okay, that's the end of another podcast. Thanks for all your feedback. And if you want to offer more, you know what to do, you illiterate little shit stains. Tweet at whatbevan, email to whatbevan@gmail.com. Or if your idea of a threesome is you, Piers Morgan and Katie Hopkins, there's always Facebook. So as Wire's thoughts turn to their next tier of matches from a man that has more tiers to his statistics than a South of the River rich bride's wedding cake, it's a slicing see you later from Sam.
All the best.
And from a North of the River one-tiered little cake mix, it's a languishing singled layer so long from Dennis.
Best seeing ya.
I'm Rob London, and if Wire keep on winning, I might definitely maybe be tier-free for next weekend. Or is that an oxymoron? You've been listening to What Would Brian Bevan Say?
Yeah, he ordered my Vacheron this week, ready for Christmas.
I put a cream all over my bollocks for that. You're gone and I'm hurting so bad, like a cloud.